Hey, mixtape listeners. You can find us every Sunday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
Oh, hey. Didn't see you come in, you sneaky son of a bitch. While you're here, I might as well tell you about our good friends at Puma. Now, Puma Hoops is back. Everyone knows this. We all know this has been the year Puma came back to hoops in a big way. Since summertime, everyone's been asking for the next Clyde Court colorway, and it's here. October 30th, the day this show comes out, the day you're hearing this right now, the Clyde Court X-Ray will be out. Now, hooping is in Puma's bones, and this shoe shows that literally. So for all those who never get crossed up or never got your ankles broken, the X-Ray is a stamp of proof. It says to the world, nope, we don't fall for that shit. Now, I have seen this shoe up close and personal. I've seen it on foot. I've seen it in a box. And I'll be honest, it looks good both. It's a very good looking colorway. It'd be a real shame if our friends at Puma had my address on file to send me a pair in size 12. I think it'd be a real shame. But October 30th, the Clyde Court X-Ray. Grab it. Don't flinch. Clyde Court X-Ray is here now. You know what else is here now? Something that never goes out of style. You know what never goes out of style? Surprising a friend or loved one with a dazzling bouquet from our close personal friends at 1-800-Flowers.com. Now just think about how great you'll make them feel with a surprise bouquet of vibrant roses. I'll say this, ladies, flip the script, take some initiative, send him some flowers. Use 1-800-Flowers. They're perfect for any occasion, anniversaries, birthdays, even make your friend or loved one's day just because. I'd love to get some just because flowers. I'd melt. But right now, when you order a dozen multicolored roses for $29.99, 1-800-Flowers will give you another dozen, plus a vase, absolutely free. That's a really good deal, because I have no idea how much vases cost. And like when I open my door and just get these 24 flowers from someone, I don't have a vase in my house. So they're giving you the vase. That's 40% off the original price. This gorgeous bouquet of two dozen roses and a rainbow of colors is abundantly packed with eye-catching flowers that are sure to draw the right kind of attention. Roses from 1-800-Flowers are picked at their peak and shipped overnight to ensure freshness and his or her amazement. His, in my case, because she's buying me flowers. That's the point of this advertisement. A dozen multicolored flowers for $29.99 plus another dozen and a vase for free is an amazing, amazing, perfect offer, but it won't last long. I need you to pick your delivery date, and 1-800-Flowers will handle the rest. Be the reason your friend or loved one's day is a little brighter with stunning bouquets from 1-800-Flowers.com. To get that dozen multicolored roses plus an extra bouquet and vase for $29.99, go to 1-800-Flowers.com. Click the radio icon and enter MIX, M-I-C-K-S. Order today and save at 1-800-Flowers.com, code MIX, M-I-C-K-S. I cannot wait to get my flowers. You know what else I can't wait to do? Get life insurance. That's right. Life insurance is really important, but one-third of people don't have it. That's a lot of people. Like, look to your left, look to your right. One of y'all don't have life insurance, and that's because it's really hard to buy. You have to work out like what you need, then you got to do the research to find the best quote, hope you don't get swindled along the way. It's not really a good way to shop for anything. So our friends at Policy Genius made the whole process a whole lot simpler. Now, Policy Genius compares quotes from the top life insurance companies to find the best policy for you. It takes just 2 minutes to get a quote. And if you don't know the first thing about insurance, my hand is raised. You can't see it, but my hand is raised. They've got all the tools you need to get up to speed. Learn the difference between term and whole life insurance. Calculate how much coverage you need and be sure you're making the right decision. Now, me, I'm not going to do any of that. They do all the comparing for me, so I'll trust their word. But if you wanted to take a peek behind the curtain, you certainly can. Policy Genius has that available as well. So whether you know a lot about life insurance or nothing at all, nothing at all, nothing at all, I want you to start your search at policygenius.com. In just 2 minutes, you can compare quotes and make an informed decision for you and your loved ones. Policy Genius, the easy way to compare and buy life insurance. Whew. There's a lot of ads, man. Like, it's a good problem to have, of course. We got a lot of close personal friends doing a lot of great things. But you talk about, like, physically reading words off of a page. Like, I haven't read that many consecutive words since, like, the fucking SATs. So I'm going to take a minute here, get into character, and explain what's going on here. Now, as you know, if you're hearing my solo voice, you know that something has went terribly, terribly wrong. No, Coley is in Boston right now. He's celebrating our Red Sox. I could not make it. And as he has never seen a Boston championship in his life, I told him to go ahead and go, man. You really never know. The Celtics stink. The Red Sox stink. Bruins, Patriots stink and stink. So he's up there. I sent my good wishes to Boston via Coley, via the train, via New York to Boston. So that's where he is. So what we got for you today is a conversation between myself and Scott Rochelle. Now, Scott is the president and CEO of the National Basketball Retired Players Association. Let me say two things first. One, I know Stephen Che is going to whoop my ass for putting three ads back to back to back. He's going to whoop me real good. And number two, it's very wild to like wake up from a text from Devlin's like, yeah, the president and CEO of the National Basketball Retired Players Association is here. So shout out to Devlin for hooking that up. Shout out to Devlin for everything he's been doing, really. Scott and I had a good talk. We talked some Twitter. We talked some Stephon Marbury. We talked some Jimmy Butler versus Karl-Anthony Towns. We talked some of the G League's new rules, how that affects the Retired Players Association. We had a very good talk. I look forward to working with Scott and the Retired Players Association more, as I am a retired National Basketball Association player. So the next voices you will be hearing are myself and Scott Rochelle.
For the year 2G, the rap game changed with one name. Jules aimed to slain anything on this plane. Remains are found when the best kept secret get heated. You went platinum with a ghostwriter, so in the game you won, you cheated.
All right, we are here on mixtape. We have got our second member of the National Basketball Retired Players Association to come on this podcast. You're following up Spencer Haywood. So you've got some big shoes to fill, but
no doubt.
You know Spencer's a guy that likes his stories.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
We've got Scott Rochelle here. Thank you for joining us, Scott.
No, thanks for having me. This is a treat.
Of course. Now, you are the president and CEO of the NBRPA,
That's correct. Yep.
Now, talk us through, how did you get into that role?
It's a good story. I am a trial lawyer by trade and practiced for about 7 years, and it was a good practice. I enjoyed practicing law, but my passion was always sports. And about 6 years in, I started to dabble in athlete management, estate planning, everything you could do as a lawyer to get involved in sports and representing players in their contract negotiations, all those types of things. And one day, one of the guys in my firm walks up and says, "Hey, you do that stupid sports thing." I was like, "Wait, what does that mean?" He says, "No, you know, you do sports." I said, "Yeah, I do sports." He goes, "You know, I know a guy." Great. Everyone knows a guy.
Right.
He says, "Yeah, so I know a guy who's big in the sports and, but he's not in sports anymore." I said, "Oh, okay, well, how's that going to help me?" And he says, "Well, you know, I'll introduce you." About a year goes past and he comes back. He goes, "Hey, remember that guy I told you about?" I said, "Yeah, the guy you never introduced me to." He says, "Yeah, he got a new job. He's with the Retired Players Association." I was like, "Oh, that's great." He says, "You know, we should set up a meeting." And from that meeting, we set up not only a legal representation deal, but also moved the retired players from New York to Chicago in our offices in my law firm. And so okay. I'm representing the association as outside legal counsel and also working with, you know, all the different staff members in all the different areas, whether it be player appearances, basically drafting a lot of contracts and work with the CEO in governance and things of that nature. So that was kind of my entree into this association. You know, a few years later, CEO resigns and I'm in a pretty good position to take over. I've been, you know, running legal and operations for about 3 or 4 years and, We do a nationwide search, and I think the board figured that continuity was going to be good and allowed me to take over at the helm. And it's been really awesome ever since, and I just love the work that I do.
Now, you didn't have anything to do with the guy before you retiring, did you? You want to kind of talk to him, kind of send him pictures of the beach and golf courses, all that?
No. You know what? This association's been around 26 years, and my predecessor had a good 5 years. And, you know, I think 5 years is a good run for someone to come in, institute their ideals and put leadership in you know, where they want it to be. And I'll be honest with you, we did some really good work during that time. I think that the time kind of ran out to where we needed some fresh views and a different look at the way we serve retired players. Our average age at the time was about 66, and, you know, things are changing. You know, younger players are coming out. They're coming out with different needs. They're not broke. You know, we talk about broke all the time. These guys aren't broke. These guys have money. Right. You know, the conversation needs to go from keeping them from going broke into, hey, how do we keep them entertained? How do we keep them engaged? How do we make them better, you know, civilians and businessmen and things like that? And so I'm literally the average age of the player who's retiring right now. I'm 38 years old. So I'm thinking through what I would want to do. And imagine if I had $100 million. How I'd want to, you know, how I want an association to work with me and take me to where I want to be.
So I guess what types of things, I guess, go into that, like in helping players transition? Mm-hmm. Like you said, they're not broke. I feel like guys are coming into the league younger now. They're seeing that money earlier, especially with the salary cap boom. So I guess from your position, how do you deal with it?
You know, with players coming out of the league now with money, you know, the focus isn't on keeping them from losing it because the education has changed. I think enough players have been shamed. The NBA and the Players Association are doing a great job working with us and, you know, with each other and getting players prepared. So we're not worried about players going broke. What we're doing is making sure players handle the transition well. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. The identity crisis. You've been playing at a high level your whole life. You know, you're that guy. Everyone knows who you are. You're playing basketball. And then at age 35, you're not playing basketball anymore. Now, who are you? What do you do each day? What defines you? When you talk about that transition, that's where we come in. We want to help players understand that they are more than just a game, that at 35 years old, you have a lot of life to live. And with all these resources, these are things you should do with them. If you want to invest, this is what you invest in. If you want to, you know, start a whole separate career, this is how you do it. And unfortunately, what happens is when you're a professional athlete, you're so specialized. You're so dug into the work that you do that you miss a couple things along the way that other people have at the age 35. So we try to fill that gap and fill that void. And you know, it's good work. It really is. The guys understand now better than ever what it takes to be successful once they're done. And they're buying into it, whether it be education, learning about investing. We're doing a lot of investing work because the players who have this money, they don't want to just put it in the bank and let it sit there. They want to get active. Right. You know, you hear a lot about tech. I'm learning about tech myself just so that I can, you know, help guide guys in the right direction. But those are things that are very important right now.
So has it been tough getting guys to buy in, or guys are pretty, you know, gung-ho about getting in and taking the advice, listening, making the right steps?
You know, things have changed, and it has been easy to get guys to buy in. You know, right now the goal is to kind of, you know, control the energy and the you know, they're excited. They want to do everything. Now we have to kind of guide them in the right direction. You know, in the past it was, I'm done playing, leave me alone, don't talk to me, you know, I'll figure it out on my own. And that attitude isn't happening as much anymore. I think with, you know, again, the PA has been very instrumental in trying to get players to think about what's next before they're done. The NBA as well. You know, we have rookie transition and we have all the different rookie programs. And in the past, players would sit in those meetings and kind of glaze over. And I think that now that the higher profile players are taking such an interest in building businesses, building their media. You know, look at what LeBron's doing with his media company and all that stuff. That's influencing other players. And so as the tides change, you know, our job gets, you know, a little easier because players want to come work with us, but harder because we have to stay on top of it all.
Right. It's something we had talked about on the show a couple of weeks ago. I feel like the change, I remember it starting around LeBron. Like everybody, it feels like all the young guys since LeBron, they're so polished. Like they've had a microphone in their face since they were 15 and 16. And guys, like, you know, before that generation, like the Darius Miles, Quentin Richardson's, they had the microphones, but I don't know if they had the kind of, I guess, access to things the way that guys like LeBron or younger guys like Jason Tatum, Carl Anthony Towns do.
Right.
So they just feel more polished there. Do you think there's any truth to that?
Oh, there's very much truth to that. And it goes from the top down. You look at the leadership. Mm-hmm. The Players Association used to be run by players who were very, you know, very smart, very capable, but they weren't always the stars. They were guys who knew how to run a business. Now, look at your Players Association, Chris Paul, LeBron, Steph. These guys are running not just the on the court, but off the court as well. And that's by design. And so the way they conduct themselves and the way they run their businesses and their personal lives, it trickles down to everyone else. And so I think that's very commendable, first of all. And, you know, second of all, you know, I talk about LeBron and Chris Paul. What they've done for retired players has been absolutely tremendous because they have now brought the retired players back into the conversation. We're talking more about retired players now than we ever have. Mm-hmm. You know, 2 or 3 years ago, Chris Paul and LeBron and the Players Association decided, look, we have a windfall of money. We have $12 billion coming down from this TV deal. Let's take care of the retired guys. So now anyone who's played 3 years has comprehensive health insurance for life. And this is this is the plan of all plans. No other professional sport has that for the retired players. And so you talk about leadership from the top down. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. And that's what's changed. So you have it trickles down to younger guys, but also going back, helping the older guys understand that they're appreciated.
I also feel like, they're helping the guys now. I know Chris Paul was arguing heavy for the, I think it's like age 37 or 38 guys. They can get like that extra year on the contract, which... he caught some flack for it, and he'll benefit from it, but guys down the line will as well. So it does feel like they are, like, looking at the road now and also looking down the road for some of the guys coming.
Oh, for sure.
Now, you said they moved the offices from New York to Chicago?
Yeah, we were in Manhattan up until 2011, and when the prior CEO took over, he had roots in Chicago. He's a Northwestern grad. And wanted us to be more centralized. And, you know, being in Chicago is easy to get around. I mean, we're a national organization. I mean, you know, New York likes to boast that it's the center of all basketball, all things basketball. But, trust me, I hear it every day. But, you know, being located in Chicago, which is, you know, my hometown city, and being able to reach everyone and be accessible and, you know, save a whole bunch of money on rent has been really tremendous.
I bet.
Yeah. And then, you know, we've got a rich basketball tradition in Chicago as well. So it fits really well. Again, I'm here in New York today because I'm here about twice a month meeting with the NBA. So as long as there's conference calls and direct flights, we're good to go.
Right. That's what I was going to say. How in the world did you convince people to leave New York? Because I'm in Atlanta. They're trying to get me to move to New York. And it's like, I don't know. Like, the plane ride's not really that bad. Like,
No. You know what? I enjoy Chicago because it's basically a big city like New York, just, you know, a lot cleaner and a lot slower, you know? So, you know,
they're going to yell at you for that, Scott. They're going to yell. I'm just telling you.
Oh, you know what? Here's the thing. They're going to yell at me regardless.
Correct.
Yeah. Right.
That is also correct.
Right.
So you're a Bulls fan?
For
or
sure.
Were you a Bulls fan growing up?
Oh, yeah. That's funny. Was I a Bulls? Yes, I am a Bulls fan. You know, obviously things have changed, but lifelong Bulls fan.
Okay, so what do you think about the team now?
rebuilding has been slow, and
one way to put it.
Yeah, it's been slow, but I do like what we're doing now. I do like the young guys. It's tough when you rebuild 3 or 4 times in a row because you don't get, you know, you don't just don't get any momentum with the guys who are there. But I like the group here. You know, I'm going to stick with them. Hope the city does. You know, Chicago can be pretty unforgiving. You look at Derrick Rose's situation. You know, Derrick was injured and, you know, many times treated as if he was just quitting on the city and the team. And it wasn't really fair. But, you know, I think the city of Chicago is ready for a competitive Bulls team. I think the major markets need to have competitive teams. You know, you know, the Knicks, you know, they need to be competitive. The Bulls need to be competitive. And, you know, the league needs it, and I'm ready for it. So pulling for both teams.
Yeah, I kind of thought, like, the the big markets need to be successful thing for a while, but it is more fun. Like hearing the Knicks even being mentioned in like the Durant sweepstakes, even like LeBron going to the Lakers, like they haven't put it together yet, but it is fun having those teams to get, like the Celtics are good again. It is fun having some of those bigger teams on top. Does it make your job any easier?
Yeah, you know what? a lot of things make my job easier, but no, you know, the big markets need it for the history and the tradition of things. You know, we do a lot of player activities in all the cities. We're trying to get to every NBA city by 2020, and we're almost halfway there by doing at least a good reunion event. And, you know, to bring out the Knicks, you know, Knicks players to an event and have them competitive on the court would make it even better. Obviously, we'll do it regardless, but, you know, it is important for the history of the game, you know, to see the big markets and the historical teams struggle. You know, we don't need that. We need them to be competitive at least once every 5 years.
Right. So by 2020, I don't know if you can tell any secrets. Are we going to have a team in Seattle by 2020?
You know, I'll say this. I know that the city of Seattle really wants it. I can't tell you that anyone outside of Seattle wants it that bad. You know, they're just other markets. There are other markets and there are other international markets right now that are really, really, you know, seem to be the focus of the NBA. And, you know, the people in Seattle obviously will tell you differently, but I see the NBA looking at everywhere else but Seattle right now.
Could you see a team in the international market within the, I mean, not by 2020 maybe, but next 10 years maybe?
Yeah, you know, I could see that. We just got back from China a couple weeks ago, and, you know, they filled stadiums. And they filled stadiums watching, you know, the Sixers and Dallas play. We played two games, played one game in Shenzhen, one game in Shanghai, and the energy was there. It really was. And, you know, my question leaving China was how does the NBA make better use of all this energy and all this fandom. And so I, you know, you look at the Asian market, we've been in Brazil. There's going to be, you know, more movement in India. Look, the international appeal of basketball is going to yield results.
I was looking, while you were in China, you celebrated Marbury's retirement.
Yes, sir.
Is that how was that? So the pictures, it looked like a motley crew of guys out there. But how was that? Because I know Marbury, he's revered out there.
Oh, it was perfect timing and it was excellent. You know, I don't know if Stefan knew that we were going to be there because he had a party and he knew the NBA was there. I don't know if he knew the players were going to show. So we took you know, Jim Jackson, Caron Butler, Jermaine O'Neal, and then Dr. J with us. And so when Steph's seeing everybody, you know, he's like, oh, man, this is cool. And then he sees Julius Erving. He just breaks down. And then you see it. It's like, you know, that's history. And that's, you know, Julius is there to support him. That was a special moment.
Right.
And so it was really good to be there for Steph because he's done so much great work in China. Again, he is a star. He's got a statue there. And people were really showing him all the love in the world. But they're also showing it to the other players. You know, I don't want to forget Sam Perkins with us, Dikembe Mutombo. You know, all these legends who've played the game are being treated as if they're gods over there. Again, the game's international appeal was not going to go away. And, you know, fully expect the NBA to take advantage of that. But, no, it was really good. You know, Stephon Marbury has done a great job as an ambassador of the game overseas, and it was great for us to be there with him to see that and for him to feel the love from us coming back, because I think that, you know, the NBA and Stephon Marbury have not always been on the same page, clearly, but the NBA made it very clear that they wanted to support him during his retirement, during that whole weekend. He then joined our group. He's at the games with us. It really was, it's what we're supposed to do, not just as a retired players association, but the NBA and the whole basketball family as a whole.
Right. That's really refreshing to see, because you just see things like NFL in particular, just the way some of their retired players are treated. And it's a process for sure. Nothing's perfect. But I just like getting a guy like Dr. J to go on a plane to China. Mm-hmm. Like he's a guy that's not doing anything he doesn't want to do. So for him to do that, he's got to fill in the mix. So, you know, Marbury definitely felt that love.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It was electric when you saw it. And then, you know, the whole night, you know, it was on from that point on. You know, everyone's having a good time. And, you know, the party stopped and we were still there. You know, the buses left. We were still there. They had to send the extra bus back to get us. And so, it's really good. And you talk about, you know, the NFL and the NBA. The difference is that the NBA is unified. You know, we have one retired players association. The NFL has, you know, they have NFLPA doing their thing. The NFL alumni is doing their thing. The Gridiron Greats are doing their thing. And when you talk about retired players, you have three or four different groups pulling for all those resources. You know, the NBA and the PA both support the Retired Players Association. That gives us great leverage and the ability to do that without having any political strings.
Right. Yeah. It also seems like the people like in charge of NFL things don't necessarily like football. They like business. From what I've seen, like everybody in the NBA, like yourself, Adam Silver, a lot of these guys over in the organizations, like they genuinely like basketball.
Oh, yeah. Well, for sure. For sure. And I mean, the culture is very strong. And you walk the hallways and you know, their debates about the games. You know, you see a game last night, they're watching the games. It's different. It's not just the business side of it. It is a full comprehensive basketball.
So do you think, is Marbury ever coming back over here? Does he just stay in China and just remain a god forever? Or?
You know, he's got business interests over there that are so strong. And the conversation that I had with him was about how do we as an association help promote and propel what he's doing on, you know, stateside. So I think there will be, obviously there will be a presence for him here, but, you know, I do not see him leaving that market, and what he's doing there is just really strong.
Yeah, now, once, like you build a statue of me, I'm not leaving.
No.
I don't care where it is. You put the statue up, I'm there for life.
And you're talking about a lot of people there. So when you talk about a fandom, oh my goodness, it was crazy. Everyone, when, you know, Dr. J, everyone, you know, claps and, oh, Stephon Marbury, it's a roar.
Right.
And it's like he's put in work there. So, you know, he's got a business team set up there. He did it right. You know, and when you talk about players who are leaving the game, sometimes they don't do it very gracefully. He knew his time in the NBA was up. And he took his talents overseas and then had a completely separate career that was equally impressive and equally profitable to him. You know, that's how you transition. You transition well by having awareness, understanding what's happening in your life and how you can take the opportunities in front of you and make the best of them. So, you know, we're all very proud of him for that.
You see more guys making that move? Like he had a good, 13, 14 years here in the NBA, then went overseas and had like another 9-10 years. Like,
right.
Could you see more guys, not necessarily China, but just in different markets, international markets?
Well, the way the NBA is building its business now, you know, they want to keep you there through the, you know, development of the G League and different things like that. I see the NBA finding a way to keep the talent stateside or within their program. I think Steph was a special situation because I think it was time for him to move on. I think that if you know, other players would have different situations. If it's not time for them to move on, the NBA is going to find something for them, even if it's not playing. You know, you've got all the talent on TV now. You've got broadcasters. You've got people doing, you know, guys going to the coaching jobs. The NBA we all want to keep players in the game. So, you know, if there's someone who's a really high value, I don't see the NBA let them out.
Now, you brought up the G League. What are your thoughts on the changes where they're trying to get the system into where they can pay guys coming to high school? You can, like, sell your own image, sell autographs, whatever. What are your thoughts on that?
From my position, both personally and professionally, it feels as if the NBA is fed up with the business practices of both the NCAA and AAU. They want to clean it up. NBA knows it's the biggest, baddest game in basketball. And they're coming to claim their throne. And that means taking control top down and making sure that if a player is of, you know, is on their radar and is of NBA quality, that player makes it to the NBA, but also has the proper training and skills to when they get to the NBA, that they're going to be an asset. You have to remember that, you know, everyone gives, you know, Adam Silver is the commissioner, but he works for the owners. The owners have an investment in their teams. And so now, you know, the owners are pushing for a better product coming out of the lower levels. And the NCAA is not providing that. You talk about the one-and-done situation. The one-and-done is very simple. The owners want to be able to invest in a product, in a player, that's going to give them return.
For sure.
And so the NBA, you know, looking at the NCAA and all their issues, it really feels as if the NBA is saying, hey, you know, we have our own program. We'll put them in our own program. We'll train them. We'll coach them. and then they'll be ready for the big leagues. And, you know, I like it. I really do. I like what's happening there. And, you know, again, you look to see the NBA take deeper control. Look at the junior NBA program the NBA's put together. The AAU program hasn't worked. You know, right. they haven't liked the skills and the training and the coaching that's come out of that program. So develop junior NBA. And you have the junior NBA regional and national championship. You know, it just creates a nice streamlined system for everyone to come in through the same system, learn basketball, and have a better product and a better game at the end of the day.
It feels long overdue. Like, I'm glad it's happening now. I like college basketball. I'm a Kentucky fan, but I still just see how filthy the game is. And I'd much rather the NBA, like you said, take hold of it than leave it to these coaches or shoe company guys, AAU guys, right. Guys like that.
I mean, at the end of the day, they want a good, solid product. They want players coming in who know the game, who can come in and contribute, and you know, sooner than later. And so when you when you look at the moves that are being made, those are the moves that are, you know, that's the end goal. That's the end goal, is to make sure that when the players come to them, they know the skills. I mean, for the Retired Players Association, we do about 20 clinics a year, and we do junior NBA branded clinics. And so we have the curriculum from the junior NBA there, and the focus is on basketball skill. It's not just throw a bunch of balls out there and have the kids shoot hoops and, you know, and get pictures. No, we're teaching skills. Former players are teaching ball handling, defense, everything is there. We're also doing life skills programs as well. We want to make sure that the student athlete is a well-rounded person, because we learned that a well-rounded person is able to handle basketball as you move up throughout the levels. They're able to be mature, make the right decisions. And so, again, it all goes down to the end product of the NBA player being a really awesome asset to the league and the team and the community.
Yeah, it also feels like guys, I guess, are seeing the long game more. Like, back in the 90s, you might get the bigger contract sooner, but maybe not that second or third contract. Right. Now I think guys are seeing you can set up that second, third contract where you 4 or 5 years, $150, $200 million, and then, like, finesse it right into an office gig or analyst work, something else. So it feels like it would definitely help the early you can get the guys in the system.
Exactly.
Do you think they'll do any, like, age limit change? Or you think this G League, like, the change will kind of cut that out? Because I heard forever that they were thinking about moving it to, I guess, 20 years old or 2 years out of high school.
Right. And the last I've heard is that the conversation between the Players Association and the NBA, that's kind of stalled. And so you're looking probably another 2 years for any decisions made. But, you know, I see the G League move as one where, you know, even if the NBA loses that fight, say, okay, oh, you know, if players can come in fresh out of high school, they're coming into this system. We're not giving them a $1 million contract. We'll give them a development, a contract of $125,000. Let them get coached and develop. And I think that was put in place as kind of a safeguard. If you know, the NBA does have to go back to kids coming fresh out of high school, could go straight into the league. I mean, you know, you look at the percentage of the players who've come fresh out of high school and, you know, really been successful. You hear the names, but you don't hear the names of the people who come fresh out and don't make it.
Right.
You know, those people fade away. And those numbers are higher than people think.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Like you said, you hear, like, you know, the Dwights, the LeBrons, the hits really hit. And I think that's why people keep wanting them. But, yeah, there are a lot of guys that didn't see that second contract. Maybe didn't even see it through the end of their first one.
Right. For sure.
Now, I go back to the Bulls for a second, or I guess a former Bull. Mm-hmm. Are you a Jimmy Butler guy?
I am.
What do you make of all this going on in Minnesota right now with him?
So watching Jimmy in Chicago and then seeing what's happening in Minnesota, you know, there's one constant within Jimmy, and that's hard work. You know, and what he said, I can only take him what he's saying, and he's saying, you know, he wants guys to work hard. And you know, there have been times in Chicago when guys didn't work hard, and you heard about it. Now, did it rise to the level of what's happening in Minnesota where he's demanding a trade? No. But this isn't new. This is classic Jimmy. Jimmy just wants people to put in the effort. And so, you know, I think it's unfortunate it's gotten to the level it's gotten to. But, you know, Jimmy's been consistent his entire career. Jimmy wants to work. He works hard. He wants to be around people who are working hard with him. Now, whether or not those guys are working hard or not, you know, that's something that's going on in their locker room. But, you know, I do appreciate, look, being a Chicago guy and what Jimmy did for us, I appreciate what he did for us. But, you know, we saw it. We saw the effort. We saw what he was doing out there on the court. He gave it all. Right. And if all he's asking is other guys do that for him, then, you know, I can't fault him.
Counterpoint. Mm-hmm. Hard work kind of stinks.
Say it again.
I said hard work kind of stinks. Like working hard, it's not great.
Yeah, you know, no one likes the back end work, but everyone loves the success from it. Let's be clear. Yeah. You know, I would have much rather had an easier road to where I am today, but obviously, you know, there's work there. We all have to work. And, you know, when it comes down to NBA basketball, it's a grind. It's a crazy grind that most people, and you and I probably won't even understand it. But if I see someone who's dedicated to it and putting all of it in, you got to respect it. And so, you know, Jimmy wants championships. Jimmy wants to win. You know, that was clear when he was in Chicago. He wanted to win games. And, you know, in Minnesota, he's looking at it. He said it very verbally. He said, look, the most talented player on the team is Cat. Most physically gifted is Wiggins. It sounds like what he's asking is if those guys put in a little bit more work, we can do some magical things here. But if they can't, then he needs to move on.
Right. You miss Tibbs in Chicago, or it was time for him to part ways as well?
Ah, man. I do miss Tibbs. I'll say that. I will say that without getting in any trouble, because I am still in the city. But no, I do miss what he brought. And, you know, it hurts me that the Rose, you know, those teams that challenged the Miami teams, that team couldn't stay together and get it going, and Derek couldn't stay healthy, because I think that was the recipe. But you know, we're missing Tibbs' toughness in the defense in Chicago, and I think that's what's really we've noticed that it's not happening. You know, things aren't happening the way they used to. And, you know, Chicago's a gritty city. You know, they want to see people diving on the floor and getting after it. That's why Joakim Noah was such a star for us, because, you know, he was going to do anything it took. And I think Tibbs brought that. And once Tibbs left, and, you know, we're still a good basketball club, but it's just not the same. People gravitate to that. You know, people gravitate to that. Again, back to the hard work part. If all the effort's there, you know, we've been underdogs since Jordan left. Let's be clear. But people in the city love that about it. People in the city love that Derrick Rose was small, but he was mighty. You know, he got in people's chest. And, you know, right now, I'm not sure who's jumping in people's chest from Chicago right now.
Now, you're an Illinois fan, correct?
Yes, I am, unfortunately.
I was going to say, it feels like a pretty good basketball scene in Chicago. Like, how are they not keeping any of these guys in state? Like, it's... like the ADs, Jabaris, Patrick Beverly, Wade, Quentin Rich, like I name upon names guys out of Chicago or Illinois area, and they're just not staying home. What's going on?
Well, look, Chicago's produced superstars, absolute superstars. And so you can't fault superstars for going to the blue blood schools. But, you know, Illinois is still pulling top talent from the state. Again, when you're a top 10 player, and you know the Dukes and Kentuckys call you, you know you have to listen to them. And I don't fault those guys, but you know, let's be clear, Illinois is still pulling in guys from the city. They're still recruiting well in the city. It's unfortunate that you know we have put out so much great talent, and the other schools have better traditions. That you know, but. You know, when you get mad at guys for going to Kentucky instead of Illinois, I mean, you know, just look at the program, look at the banners, you know.
Right.
You know, you know what you're going to get when you go to Kentucky. You know what you're going to get when you go to Duke. You're going to be on national television. You're going to be with a legendary coach, and you're probably going to you're going to get a chance, a good solid chance to play NBA. I don't want to fault young men for making those decisions. You know, in Illinois is 2 hours south of Chicago in the middle of a cornfield. So it takes a very...
I did not know that.
Yeah, it takes a very talented recruiter to get a young man to turn down, you know, the riches of the Blue Blood schools to go to Illinois. But, you know, it's about culture and it's about, you know, making a tradition and keeping tradition. And I think Illinois lost that somewhere down the line. And, you know, they'll get it back. But, again, when a young man has, you know, Coach Calipari come into his living room and tell him, hey, the last four guys in your position that I recruited are playing NBA and they're making a combined $500 million,
right,
you know what's going to happen.
Right. Yeah, you can point to D. Brown and Darren Williams, but, yeah, it's not the same.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the same. That was a special team. And, look, you know, who recruited those guys? Bill Self.
Yep.
Bill Self recruited those guys and made something special. And then when the Blue Bloods called him, he went to Kansas.
Right.
You know, every once in a while, schools like Illinois have to be realistic about what they can get.
Yeah, that's fair. Going back to the G League, like with the growth, because I remember when they started as the D League, it felt like it was seen as a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Like I went to the D League or came out of the D League, it was a bad thing. And now with the growth, the investment in that, it doesn't feel like a death sentence anymore. So I guess where do you see the G League moving forward over the next few years?
I see fluid movement between G League players and NBA rosters. I really do. Mm-hmm. I mean, the G League is being modeled after the MLB farm system. You know, in at least the next 5 years, each NBA team will have an affiliate program. So, you know, where do you send your rookies to develop? Where do you take guys who are injured to rehab? You know, there's going to be a steady flow of players. And look, you have your own G League team, you're not calling guys off the couch when you have a free agency. You have guys right there in your system who've been working with coaches who you communicate with back and forth, and you've seen them, you've scouted them. It's a beautiful thing for the NBA side.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for the player side, you know, I do think players need to be very wary of the fact that when they come out early, they could spend their entire career in the G League. Mm-hmm. And was that $50,000.
Right.
You got to look at it both ways. And from the it's a great business plan. Awesome for the NBA, but for a player who wants to come out early and wants to say, oh, I'm play the G League, you could sit there for 5 years. You could be there your entire career. That is, right. You know, that's the trade-off on it. But, you know, it is going to be, you know, 30 G League teams, 30 NBA teams, and, you know, fluid movement is good for the players and it's good for the teams as well. So look for that for sure.
I'm very much looking forward to it, especially if they start getting – you know, the next couple of years, some of these five-star guys, like if they can get them from going to a Duke or Kentucky, get them into their system. You know, you'll learn our plays. You'll get to meet the guys, learn the coaches, lift weights, all that. And then the following year, we'll bring you right up. Hopefully, you can hit the ground running.
I mean, look, it's a owner's dream to be able to get a guy, get him under contract, but then develop him without paying him $10 million.
Yeah, pretty good.
But yeah, it's a great business plan. And you know, none of this is confidential. That's exactly what they're doing. And that's exactly what they're looking to do. From our standpoint, and you know, we unfortunately don't represent G League players in the Retired Players Association, but with all the fluid moving back and forth, there're going to be a lot of guys who come through both programs who will be in our association. And you know, what I want to make sure is that everyone's getting the right education. Everyone knows what to do. And so if you've been 5-6 years in the G League, you should probably start looking at off the court things as well. Mm. You know, after 5 or 6 years, you know, you're getting closer to 30, life's going to change for you, you know, pretty soon. And so, you know, we work close with the NBA and literally meeting with the G League this afternoon about how we take the transition programming and build it around what they're doing and make sure that we are, as a Retired Players Association, putting things in front of them that they're going to want to gravitate to. You know, for so long we've been chasing players. We don't want to chase them. We want to trap them. We want players to come out of the game going, okay, this is done. Now I need to go over and talk to the Retired Players Association and say, hey, okay, these are my next steps, or what are my next steps?
Right.
But the wherewithal to say what are my next steps comes with education and maturity.
So as it is now, like when guys retire, do they come to you? Do you go to them? Or is it just kind of
a little bit of both
thing? Yeah.
But Tyler, you gotta remember, only your top tier players hold that press conference where they're crying and they got the family on stage.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
right.
You know what retirement really looks like? it looks like a player training for 2 or 3 years, getting calls from Europe and maybe going to Europe, but not getting the NBA call. That's what right. the majority of retirement looks like for players. Retirement happens before they know it. They're retired. They don't know it yet. And so then at that point, when they make that final decision that they're not going to play again or the reality hits them, they need to be able to know, okay, wow, I may not play again. What's next?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I need to call Scott and the staff over at the Retired Players Association to get going. For so long, that wasn't happening. So we're catching guys mm-hmm. 5-6 years out. And in that 5-6 year period, everything can go wrong. With the money right. stops, marital problems, gambling, drinking, all those things. So our goal is to make sure that once they're done, they know exactly where to go, where to find us, the services, and we have people right there ready to be caseworkers to get them on the right path.
Definitely. Now, I noticed earlier you were tweeting about like players getting in like video games. Like, how do you make yourself available? Because I bounced around the league a little bit. I want to get my likeness in the game.
So this is a great topic because we get this every year, especially when 2K puts their game out. So we have a license agreement with the NBA, so we're able to pay out royalties to players for use of their likeness, you know, through an authorization program. So once you've played and you're done playing, the league no longer has automatic right to use your likeness. So you then sign an authorization with us, which is joint between the Retired Players Association and the NBA for use of your likeness, and then we pay back a royalty. So as long as the authorization's on file, we can present it to all the different NBA vendors and partners and licensees and say, hey, look, Tyler played, Tyler's available. If you need to use him, you can use him. And so like with 2K, the 2K game, players get paid. You know, you can't just put someone's name and face on there. We've had litigation on that without paying them.
Right.
So once we get your authorization, we turn it over to the NBA. The NBA gets it to the licensees. 2K makes final decision as who they want to use. But our goal is to make sure that every player who's ever played who's eligible is on that list so they can be used. Worst thing in the world is, you know, they want to put out a all-time Charlotte, you know, Hornets team, and then they can't find a guy, and then deadline comes, the game comes out, he's not on it. What happens, that guy calls me and says, hey, my kid is crying right now. We bought the game, we got it, we see an all-time Hornets team, I'm not on it. What can I do? I say, well, you didn't sign an authorization. You'd be amazed at how quickly the authorization gets faxed over to me, but the game's already out.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah.
So our goal, you know, we want to make sure that people know where to find us again so that you can continue to get that revenue stream. And look, and you're not going to make a living off that revenue, but it's still good money.
So is it something, do you have to do it like every year, or like you sign it and like you opt in?
Yeah.
Or it has to
year once, by year? Once you opt in, you're in. Yeah, once you opt in, you're in, and most players do it in conjunction with their membership to the association, and so it's a really easy program, and you know, no one opts out, because if you were to opt out, then you have to go do the deal on your own, and unless you're Michael, Magic, Kareem, they're not going to do a deal with you on your own that's going to be any better than what you have through the NBA licensing program. That's just the reality of it. So it behooves players to get involved. And again, it doesn't cost the players any money to get involved. They sign the authorization and they're in.
Yeah, nobody wants to be like player 86 on the old Hornets team. Like, even if your rate's a 62, like, I want to take my name on there.
Right. No, for sure.
Let me say, I got a couple last questions for you. You're a hip hop fan, yes?
Yes.
So, what are you listening to these days? Are you old school? You like the new stuff? What are you listening to right now?
You know, I've gone back to the old school because the new stuff isn't bad, but I think the nostalgia from the old stuff and some of the stuff. I'll give you a perfect example. So, Public Enemy. I'm listening to Public Enemy right now because their message is so timely for what we're going through right now in society, and you know, we need those types of messages coming through hip hop. And I'm looking for it. And maybe I'm an old head. Maybe I'm, you know, being 38, you know, I'm out of touch. But, you know, when I'm listening to the music, I want to hear more than just the usual, these are the brands and labels I'm wearing. And I'm, you know, this is what I'm drinking and this is what I'm doing. And so I've gone back because I want to hear a message. I want someone to talk to me.
Right. What do you think of the NBA guys like dabbling in rap? Like Dame Lillard's big in it. Mm-hmm. LeBron has dipped his toes in the water.
Mm-hmm. You know,
you want a message from like those guys, or do you? You think anything that like just guys having fun, or
you know, every ball player wants to be a rapper, every rapper wants to be a ball player, and vice versa. You know, right. It's always been that way. What I can appreciate is that Dame Lillard actually isn't bad. You know,
he's really not.
No, he's all right on the mic. But you know, again, players, you know, players like to branch out. Players are more than just basketball players, and you're seeing that now. Players mm-hmm. that you know they want to do everything they can. And once they get to a certain point where they're not just focused on ball all day, all night, just working out, and they can branch out to stuff. And so now you're seeing guys do more of that stuff. I'm all for it. I'm all for people, you know, exploring, getting outside of their comfort zone. And, you know, that's what players are doing. You know, you're hearing from players now. 2018 is just a different type of year because players will refuse to be silent. They refuse to just sit, you know, shut up and dribble. We've heard that so many times.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And they're controlling their message. They're controlling what they say. They're controlling how they sound. And it's not going to stop. In 2018 is just the beginning of something beautiful. And especially from our association standpoint, we have over 1,000 players. We want to give them all the voice in the world. You know, we've launched our own studio to try and give them all that voice because no longer do they have to rely on going on or off the record. They can write their own, you know, blogs and posts, or just grab their phone and start talking like Steven Jackson. Steven Jackson grabs his phone and tells you exactly what he wants you to hear.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
Not poop punches.
No, but and that's awesome because for so long players haven't done that. You're talking about players branching out into different things that aren't typical for them. Good for them. Good for them.
Yeah.
Be seen as men and not just ball players.
Now, I know, you're big on Twitter. Is that the... That's your social media app of choice?
Yeah, Twitter. Twitter is my social media app of choice, and also it's my news wire. It's everything.
Right. Why? What is it about Twitter? Is it just that, like, the instant information?
It's instant information. It's, you know, you can go from high-level stuff to the news stuff to you can get the cultural, everything. You know, you just learn from the information. It's constantly flowing, and in this job, You need to know what's happening. If something happens with a player, you need to be able to see it immediately, react immediately. If a player is in distress, or I'm not going to name any names, but there'll be times when a picture will pop up of a player, you know, who's under the influence or having struggles, to be able to call a player in the area or someone you trust, or one of the old heads, and say, hey, this guy's having troubles. Can you find him? Can you reach out to him? You know, do you have his number? Yeah. Or here's his number. Call him. Go find him. We've done that in the past, but you can't do that without being in touch with what's happening on a daily, on a minute by minute basis.
Yeah, that I'm a Twitter guy too, and there is so much good, but it's so much bad, man. It's like you got to take the good with the bad. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think you did a very good job of highlighting the good.
Yeah, you know, it's also entertaining.
For better or worse, yeah. It can be very entertaining.
For sure.
Last question. I'm glad you mentioned you guys have a studio now. Right. Does the NBRPA, do they have an official podcast? Because if not, it'd be a real shame if we linked up and made Mixtape the official podcast. A real shame.
Well, since you've mentioned that, we did. Everyone's launching podcasts, and we said, you know what, we need to take the player's voice and put it into a podcast. And we put a few of them out, and we had success there. The new iteration of it's going to be different, though. It's going to hit you hard because it's going to launch All Star Weekend, and it's going to be led by players, focusing on players. And obviously, I can't make you the official podcast, but you know, we can continue to have conversations about how we can work together, because I think that the voice and players' voice is going to be very important. But look for the new podcast coming out, again, led by a player with not just a great basketball resume, but a great business resume. And watch him bring in some of the people he played with, the legends, you know, some of the greatest of all time, to talk about what it was like to play the game, but also what it's like now. Again, the stories, you put two players in a room and a microphone, man, it's magic. And, you know, that's the goal for what we're looking to do with the Legend Studios and the podcast.
You said you're launching at this All-Star, which is going to be launched, like, from Charlotte, from all the action?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We'll be on site. That sounds great. Yeah, we should be there too. I'd love to link up with you and Spencer. Maybe hop on. We'll work out the kinks of maybe getting this to be the official podcast down the line. We're looking down the road for it.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, anything is possible. When good people come together, but you know, we do appreciate you all supporting us. I mean, you know, you had Spencer on recently, and that meant the world to us and giving players voice. So anything we can do to get the players' voice out there, man, I'm with it.
Of course. I appreciate that. Scott Rochelle, President and CEO of the National Basketball Retired Players Association. Thank you for joining us, Scott.
Thanks, Tyler. Thank you so much.
Sometimes, you know, something looks like it's been there a while, I kind of try to avoid that.